What is going on, guys? We are in the zone. This is episode 193 today. I'm here, as always, with Giancarlo Alino, Chris Martelli here. And we're going to kick it off today with just both reviewing the pay-per-views that happened last weekend, Clash at the Castle and AEW All Out. We're going to start it, though, Alino, with Clash at the Castle. It was a pretty damn good pay-per-view, if you ask me. I think it was probably, if not the best pay-per-view of the year, I'll say second best behind WrestleMania. Now, we saw a lot of really awesome moments, you know, starting with going all the way to Gunther and Sheamus stealing the show. Matt Riddle, Seth Rollins was really good. We finally got a Dominic Mysterio heel turn. Out of all the moments that you saw on the Saturday, Alino, which one was your favorite?
It's got to be Gunther versus Sheamus. They delivered. I thought last week when we were doing this preview, I said this is going to be match of the weekend. And I think it was. Made a great case for it because these two, it was hard hitting. There were no flips. There were no dives, 10,000 super kicks, just beating the crap out of each other. And that crowd ate it all up. Sheamus was over like crazy when he came out. He got a nice pop. And then after the match, standing ovation for him. And I think it's well deserved. Like, he's a guy that he kind of gets underappreciated at times, and in terms of like how people look at his career. But I think this was nice that the crowd gave him that moment. And for his career, it's a nice moment for when he eventually retires, because he's in his 40s now. So to have that moment now was a great appreciation for him.
Yeah, to me, I agree with you exactly. I think that was the best part of Clash at the Castle for sure. I did not really know what to expect. I know Sheamus puts on hard-hitting performances. Looking back at Walter in NXT, his resume was just, he's going to slap the crap out of you. It's going to be a hard-hitting match, and that's exactly what we saw. We saw Gunther get his shots in, Sheamus get his shots in. At the end of it all, though, Gunther was the guy that overpowered him, and he's been overpowering guys since coming to WWE. So it was a great story there. I loved how Imperium also reunited. The theme, everything in that situation, getting Giovanni Vinci back, I think was a big part of this segment as well. I'm not going to lie to you. I really liked the fact that the Brawling Brutes and Imperium didn't really, like, yeah, you know, we saw at the beginning of the match, they kind of were beating the shit out of each other. And I thought that was a cool spot where they're just staring each other down. But I'm really happy that they didn't ruin the match. They didn't get involved too much. It was just the two main guys going at it for that title. And I'll say this to you, Alino. Now that we saw a 5-star match between Gunther and Sheamus, what do you think this means moving forward for the Intercontinental title? Because I've said to you, I don't know how many times, this title deserves better. We talked about it last week. The Miz was probably the last time the title seemed legitimately relevant. With a 5-star match, man, for the IC title, what does this mean moving forward?
Yeah, I think it's going to mean WWE, and I think Triple H takes this title more seriously. Like before, I know the last 5 years, I would say, it's Vince McMahon, when he was running things, probably didn't view it like that anymore. He just like, whoever has it, let's see if they can get over with it, and maybe we'll find something for them after. But with Triple H now, it looks like he wants to put importance on it, that whoever wins it is going to have that responsibility to go out there and have that kind of match that Gunther and Sheamus had. So if they look at other guys now coming up, I think we can see some similar matches out of them. And I think this could be that workhorse title and that kind of title where it's going to be one of the longest matches on the card each time it's undefended.
Yeah, I agree. I think it should be as well. You're looking at Gunther and how great he's been able to be. And also, you're looking at what he's been able to accomplish in terms of, like, look at his body. This guy was, like, a lot more out of shape back in NXT. They gave him the title for 800-plus days. And all of a sudden, this guy loses the weight. He looks absolutely motivated. He's putting on classics as much as he can. And make no mistake about it, it says it right there, the Wrestling Observer giving it 5 stars. Absolutely. This was a match that definitely exceeded expectations. It built up Gunther's resume, I think, and legacy. Like, I think this was a guy coming into this match, a lot of fans, they obviously knew his body of work in NXT, but guess what, man? Sometimes that doesn't translate to the main event scene. Look at Ricochet. Look at so many names that have come up and unfortunately haven't had that success, even Finn Balor. So I think Gunther, they're doing it the right way with him. And you said it perfectly with Sheamus, long deserving standing ovation. He's been doing it for 12 plus years. For to me, honestly, Alino, first ballot Hall of Famer. He's headlining. He's done it all. But just an absolute, a great treat to see him, especially that being the second match on the card. That definitely set the tone. But moving on, man, I want to just talk about the Liv Morgan, Shayna Baszler singles match for the title. To me, that was a little bit of a surprise. We did say last week that maybe we would see Shayna Baszler win and squash her. But Liv Morgan, man, she put on her fighting boots and she actually had a pretty decent match. What did you think about this one? And do you think it hurt Shayna a bit?
I'm actually surprised that Shayna didn't squash her and win the title. And we go through this whole babyface like chase for the title again for Liv Morgan. Like, they actually gave her another legitimate win. Like, she beat another one of Ronda Rousey's friends, and now Ronda Rousey could be tonight getting a title shot again. But if Liv Morgan starts picking up these W's over them like that, I think we're going to be looking at her in a different way. Like, is this going to be a dominant reign for her where after she gets through with these two, maybe Charlotte comes back and she does the same to Charlotte and they just feed up the top stars to her and just make her that attraction for the women's roster? It would be interesting.
I mean, I think I saw a stat, Alino, where she's the only woman on the whole roster to pin Ronda twice. And when I saw that, I was like, all right, they have a lot of high hopes for you, Liv. You gotta pull out your boots. And she did it on Saturday. And hey, if she beats Ronda Rousey tonight, I don't really know what her expectations are and her ceiling. Can she hold the title for as long as Becky and Charlotte did? Probably not. But this run to me has been, it's been surprising. So I really applaud WWE booking. I didn't, like we said, we didn't see Liv Morgan winning this, but she did. And then here's the biggest, I mean, it wasn't a surprise. It was predictable. We did call it, but that tag team match, man, honestly, I thought it was really good. The Judgment Day and Edge and Mysterio, there were a lot of fast spots, a lot of slow spots, but at the end of the day, we saw the storyline take an even bigger, you know, jump with Dominic turning. What were your thoughts on that part of the contest? And, you know, what do you see next for Dominic Mysterio? Do you see him staying with Judgment Day on the main roster, or do you potentially see him getting sent down to NXT?
Yeah, I think either Ray or Dominic, one of those two had to turn, just because I think the story played out. It was a nice moment when he came in, but they do need to do something with Dominic just to get him over on the main roster the way they want to. And I think what they did, I know I would have loved Ray to turn, but Dominic turning, I think, is the best move for his career, because now it's going to give him a new character. Some fans like didn't like him to begin with, and now it just gives him even more of an excuse to boo him. But this whole thing with Judgment Day, I just don't know if that was a right fit. He came out on Raw, and I know they're doing the thing with Rhea Ripley, but I think this could lead to something where that group in NXT with Santos Escobar, Legado del Fantasma, I think it's called that, I think they could be called up. And I think Dominic has another swerve here as a heel where he's going to lie, cheat, and steal like Eddie Guerrero, and he's going to join that group instead when he turns on Judgment Day, just to get him back, because I think Dominic's holding some receipts over here.
I like that. Are they ready to be called up?
I think they are, because they had like some angle there where he would have to leave NXT because he lost to Tony D. But if they want to bring up the whole faction, I think it would be a lot better, because it adds to his presentation. When he was just on NXT alone, I think maybe he could have gone up, but it's like one of those guys like Gunther too. Like, he has a whole group. It just adds to the whole presentation and probably a lot more of a positive going forward.
Well, man, that swerve would be legendary. This guy turning on two factions. That would be that'd be unbelievable for Dominic. But we got to move on. We saw the animosity building between Riddle and Rollins, man. And the match did not disappoint. I thought at times Riddle was going to win, and at times I thought Seth was going to win. And, you know, they kept you on the edge of your seat. I love when Rollins did the Randy Orton DDT. That was absolutely phenomenal. And he even hinted, I don't know if you saw it during the match, he hinted at doing the punt, which I thought was like one of the better spots of the of the show and of the match. So what did you think of this match? Did you think the right guy had to win? Did you think the right guy won here? And do you think this feud is done? Because I don't think so.
Yeah, I think the right guy won. I think Seth needed the win just a little bit more. Matt Riddle's been on a tear on Raw, and he's been coming up in some of his feuds, getting the win and having great matches. But I think this one elevated him more because Seth is a guy that everyone looks at as he's going to have those show-stealing matches. So world champ guy like Seth Rollins, who's been in the main event and hasn't had a world title in a while, beats a guy like Matt Riddle. I think it helps him. And maybe if Randy Orton comes back, they can do Seth versus Randy, or they can even put Seth Rollins in the mix there for like a, I don't know if Bobby Lashley wants to defend it against him or if that's the plan. But if Roman's still both champions and Raw doesn't have a world title, I think they have to do something there where Seth and Bobby Lashley are going at it.
That'd be pretty good, man. Honestly, I'd be intrigued with that. And you think Riddle and Randy Orton is still going to be slated for WrestleMania, or do you think Riddle's going to maybe surprise the world and maybe be one of Roman Reigns' contenders at some point?
Yeah, I'd like to see Randy come back, just them two embracing and Riddle thinking that Randy's back and everything's okay, and he just hits him with the RKO and turns back into that old asshole heel Randy Orton. He plays so that role times. He plays it so well, so it'd be a shame if he didn't go back to being a heel again.
Yeah, we need to see that Randy Orton one more time. And of course then we had the main event, man. I know you predicted that maybe Drew would get the win and Theory would cash in. I said Roman retains, and Roman just keeps it going. The Roman train is still going strong, and the match was 30 damn minutes, man. That was a long one. What did you think about it? Do you think it exceeded expectations? Were you a little disappointed with the result? And what's next for Roman, man?
Yeah, I think it was a little too long. I thought the match was great regardless. They had a lot of swerves in it. Austin Theory comes out, then looks like he's going to cash in, gets knocked out by Tyson Fury at ringside. Roman then takes a finish, takes a claymore again, and it looked like Drew was going to win it. Drew even had his old entrance scene beforehand as like a little intro, so the crowd was going crazy. I thought it was a perfect way for Drew to win, but it looks like they have other plans for Roman right now, and I'm not mad about the result because Solo Sikoa coming in does make things for Sami Zayn. It helps kickstart that program with Kevin Owens and the Usos, so I'm all for Roman retaining there.
Yeah, I like it too. I think for the long term, I think they have big plans for Owens and Zayn, like you mentioned. I think for the tag team, the Usos have held it for quite some time, and you know, they were building up the Usos' resumes and legacy quite a bit at the pay-per-view. They did a little bit of a promo with the Usos and how dominant they've been for so many years. I think you insert Kevin Owens, who I thought, dude, a couple weeks ago was going to turn heel after attacking Ezekiel. I thought, like, it just took a completely different turn. He turned basically babyface after facing Happy Corbin. And now it looks like he's going to be, you know, he is that prize fighter KO, but he's a face. So you bring Sami Zayn into the mix after a potential bloodline beatdown. I think that's absolutely perfect for the tag division. And you know, there's not a lot of great teams out there right now that can beat the Usos. You know, the New Day are doing their thing with the Viking Raiders. I think there's just so much potential in the tag division that Triple H is finally, I think he's finally seeing that, you know, they have both belts. Somebody has to beat them at some point. I think Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn could be that tag team, no doubt about it. But overall, you know, I know that we really enjoyed this show. I thought it was better. Like I said, I think it was second best or the best pay-per-view of the year. Not a lot of negatives in this one, but I will say this before we go to AEW. Were you surprised that we did not get to see Sasha Banks at this pay-per-view?
I am a little bit. I thought if she wasn't going to be on Saturday, I thought Monday for sure. And we didn't see any sign of them. I know on social media, there's like all these pictures with Titus O'Neil, Bayley, her, Naomi. So clearly, it looks like she's going to be back in the mix at some point. I just think it would have been perfect on Raw if they had that whole tag scene. Once that gets sorted out, though, I think it's close, though. So maybe if it's not This coming Monday, I think of like whatever happens at Extreme Rules, whatever follows that, I think you have to have her back in the mix before Crown Jewel.
Do you have, because I think on Monday night they're doing EO and Thing for the tag titles. Do you think they win it on Monday? And because the way that it's panning out for me, Alino, is I think Raquel and Aaliyah lose on Monday. I don't see them retaining. I think EO and Dakota Kai win the tag titles. And I think Sasha might come out on Monday night with Naomi to maybe challenge them for the tag titles at the pay-per-view or maybe a triple threat. I'm not sure, but would you rather have that or would you rather have them wait till maybe after the, maybe during the pay-per-view or after a pay-per-view?
Yeah, I think whenever they change hands of titles, I would have them come out right after the match. So when they had that tournament, I thought EO and Dakota were going to win, and that's when they come back. But they went in another direction, and maybe they want to help build up Aaliyah a little bit more and Raquel since they're both fairly new to the main roster. So I think that would make sense. If you have the title changing hands and them making their return, crowd goes crazy for that, and then Triple H can have another tag team scene that he can develop and hopefully build up more.
Yeah, a lot of potential there. But now we got to move on to All Elite, All Out, AEW, man. Like, this, to me, this pay-per-view was pretty good. I thought it was a little bit longer than it should have been, a lot of matches. I guess I'll start it off. We'll just go right through the card. We had Hook versus Angelo Parker here, and of course Hook stays undefeated, beats him by submission. What did you think about this match, and what do you think is next for Hook? Because I'm looking at a lot of challengers for him, and I don't know if he's going to have this long reign like Goldberg did in WCW, but like, what do you think about this Hook reign? Because he doesn't look big. Like, he's just a guy. Like, he looks like a little kid out there, and he's beating everybody. Like, what do you think about this run by Hook?
I think they need to just do something different. And I know him and Danhausen are like a team sometimes. I think they need to commit to that long term and make them a tag team. So if Hook is in a match and he loses, it's Danhausen taking the pin. They could continue building him up and just running through guys. But I think to save his character, I probably the tag team scene would probably be best.
Yeah, like I just feel like him and Cargill are very similar. Like, they have a lot of potential, but you're just going to make them stay undefeated and put on, what, 4-minute matches? Like, I don't like it. I don't buy it. But, you know, I think the FTW Championship, I think it deserves a little better than 3 minutes, no? Like, I know Hook is a pretty good name, but it's not going to gravitate to a lot of fans if it's 4 minutes.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those things where, are they confident in him to go? It depends on the opponent, but are they confident in him having a 15-minute match on a pay-per-view? Or do they think that he's not ready yet, so they don't want to expose any weaknesses he might have? But I'm with you. Like, I think that eventually they have to do something where, like, is this guy going to be on the main roster, or their main roster, or is he going to be still honing his craft there on AEW Dark and Elevation on YouTube?
Yeah, and so that was, like, again, these were just the pre-show matches, but we also had, you know, Guevara and Tay Mello defeat Ortiz and Ruby Soho by pinfall. Did you like this match too? Like, to me, it was whatever. I mean, the AAA World Mixed Tag Team titles, it's obviously great to see the couple, Sammy and Tay, get the win here, but I just, to me, I don't know. Like, I kind of want the Jericho Appreciation Society to kind of break up at this point, man. Like, I just, it's not interesting.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, I was at the TFC game and I'm looking at Twitter of like clips that pop up and I see this spot and Ruby, it looked like she got injured. I'm just thinking, what the fuck happened here? Like, Sammy Guevara holding back here, almost, I'm surprised no one broke their neck, thank God. But like, this whole match, just a disaster. If it wasn't on the show, I would have been happier. This whole mixed tag thing, if someone's going to get hurt like that, they got to just reevaluate what titles they put on and kind of matches and who's in them.
And dude, for me, the most disappointing thing arguably of all the whole All Out pay-per-view is, like, you're telling me you're not gonna have Pac and Kip Sabian on the show? Like,
yeah,
dude, it was on the pre-show and it was like a solid 13-minute match, and I'm looking at that and I'm like, this motherfucker, leaves WWE as one of the most like highly touted, potential driven guys, and this guy is not even making the main card. It just, it amazes me. Like when AEW first was a company, I remember 3 years ago, he was facing Kenny Omega, and now this guy's on the pre-show. Like, come on, man. I know the match was good, but you definitely, you have to give Pac a lot more opportunity.
And that's a new title too. This is not like a title that they just, oh yeah, it's the FTW title. This is like a title they really put a lot of thought into, it looked like. And when Pac won it, it looked like a big deal. And now it's like a pre-show title and he's never really defending it. They're not really caring about it, which is a shame because Pac came into AEW with like this long undefeated streak. And when Kenny Omega actually beat him, it was looked at as, okay, this is a main event feud right here.
Like it to me, dude, honestly, I hate bringing, like, I hate mentioning WWE with AEW, but it reminds me of 2012 when The Miz held the Intercontinental title and he was on pre-shows against Sin Cara and Santino. And it's like, if you're the Intercontinental champion and you're on a pre-show and you're facing Sin Cara, that's not going to do anything for any title. So I hope this was just a one-off for Pac on the pre-show. He definitely does not deserve to be there. And I guess we'll see, man. But I do agree with you. Like, when he won the title, it was a big freaking deal. And now he's here pre-showing it up. It to me, it's just surprising. And even another guy on the pre-show, Eddie Kingston. Like, all right, this guy's on the pre-show. I mean, he obviously got the win here. What did you think about this one? Does the result really matter? Because Eddie Kingston, to me, has a lot of potential. He has a lot of future opponents he could go up against, but at the end of the day, man, it's up to Tony Khan to tell him, hey, we're going to put you in this storyline. We're going to put you here. Do you think Eddie Kingston really has any sort of ceiling ending 2022?
I think if they give him the right type of feud, like he was feuding with Jericho and the whole Jericho Appreciation Society with Moxley, like he had a lot of big time feuds and haven't really gone anywhere. He's back on the pre-show now. Like, I think that's a shame. If they're going to use him like that, put him somewhere meaningful on the card or have him be a run-in and do something with him. But I think that was disappointing, just how they just put him on the pre-show.
Yeah, I agree, man. And, you know, that's it for the pre-show. Now we go to the main card, and we started, obviously, with the casino ladder match, and we saw the Joker. Just first of all, Stockley Hathaway is a beauty, comes out, takes the mask off, takes the freaking the chip, and he's like, okay, that's it. And then you see the Joker come out, gives it to him, and they walk off. Now, before that happened, what did you think initially of it as a ladder match? Were you happy with it? Did you like the spots? I thought, honestly, man, no surprise here. Claudio, to me, was the standout, you know, doing his typical running around the ring, uppercuts, jumping around. I also thought in this match, Andrade was pretty good, but to me, Rey Fénix, like in these matches, I don't know what it is, he stands out to me more than anybody else. But in terms of you, Aldino, who stood out and did you like the end result? Because to me, it left me intrigued.
Yeah, the end result was perfect. No reveal of who it was. The mask is on. A lot of people saying, like, thinking of who it could be. So it gives speculation throughout the whole show. People go on Twitter and after that, All Out ends up trending. So that's probably the best way to go about with that. And Rey Fénix, I'm with you there. Just whenever it's this kind of match, he does a lot of crazy shit. So as long as he didn't get injured, thankfully, him, Andrade looked good. It's good to see him finally on the pay-per-view. So I thought those guys did a great job in that match.
Yeah, man, that pile driver spot with Andrade on the lap. I hope he didn't break his neck. I guarantee you, if that was Bryan Danielson, his neck is broken. So that match was great. I'm not going to lie to you, though. When I saw the Joker come out and you see the walk, it's like, okay, I know exactly who that is. But it was great nonetheless. Great ending to that match for sure, and it was a great opener. But then we had, obviously, the World Trios Championship. I'll call this match, Alino, the spot fest of the night. I mean, you know, the Elite taking on Hangman Adam Page in the Dark Order. I thought Adam Page looked fantastic in this match, arguably the best out of everyone in it. If you think about it, man, the Dark Order, they had their spots, but to me, Paige, just he outshined everybody. Kenny Omega looking closer to 100%. I won't say 100% yet, but what were your thoughts on this match? I could count about 55 super kicks in it. Just overall, though, were you happy with the end result and the Elite winning?
Yeah, it was a fun little match. I'd like to see Kenny back on pay-per-view, so that was a positive sign. But I think when they were going through this tournament, it would have made a lot more sense if Will Ospreay and his team were in the final and they did this Hangman Page and Dark Order versus the Elite on Dynamite. I think it would have helped them more. And for the fans tuning in on pay-per-view, you could have built it up more. It's like Kenny Omega, Will Ospreay in the same ring, could have got more out of it and would have been meaningful for a final for a title.
Do you see, like, I'm looking back at the way they built the tournament and you look at the teams, and I don't know if they should have gone with the Elite winning it, honestly. Like, you're looking at the Young Bucks and Kenny, one of the guys, like, these are the guys that basically started it all, obviously with Cody Rhodes, but I don't know if they really should have went with Kenny and the Young Bucks winning this. I think it would have been a lot more surprising, a lot more intriguing if Hangman and the Dark Order did end up winning this, if not Will Ospreay's team. I agree with you there. But I just thought this match could have been a lot better technically. It was just spot fest after spot fest, finisher after finisher. Even the end result to me was whatever. You know, he does his own finisher to his teammate and then Kenny just throws him aside and pins him. So to me, it did the job, obviously, with these six guys in the ring. It was bound to be fun. But in terms of an actual title match, I was a little bit disappointed. But gonna move on. This to me was a very disappointing title defense, AEW the TBS title. We did say last week that maybe Cargill squashes squashes Athena here. I said to you I thought it would be a little more of a match, and you know, Athena came out, she got a couple spots in. Obviously we could tell Alino that the chemistry was not there between the two, but I liked the promo. I liked Cargill's entrance, you know, tributing the She-Hulk. I thought that was a pretty cool moment there. But, you know, again, there it is. She's undefeated. What did you think about this? And who's going to be the woman, dude, to take it away from Cargill?
Yeah, they're backing themselves in a corner week by week with this. They have to have a plan in mind because eventually, even if she loses, if it's the wrong opponent to do it, they're going to put themselves in a similar situation that Goldberg was in where, yeah, it's Kevin Nash, but how did he do it with a taser? And the whole outcome has to be something that protects everyone involved there and their character. So unless they're building up Jamie Hayter more in this whole situation, because she comes up short there with Toni Storm, that's probably the more believable if there's going to be somebody to take the title off her.
Yeah, I was even going to maybe say, like, would you maybe go with Hikaru Shida, like, to maybe beat Cargill? Like, she to me is a pretty cool babyface story. Like, a lot of people like her a lot, and I think if there's one woman that can maybe do it in terms of babyface versus heel, I think Shida would probably be the best option. But you said it perfectly there. I think now with Toni Storm winning the title, I thought Britt Baker and Hayter in that match were fantastic. But you know, I don't know if Toni Storm was the right one to win. I agree with you. I think Jamie Hayter maybe should have won this. And maybe down the line, Alino, you do maybe the TBS title taking on the AEW women's title. And maybe winner take all. Because to me, man, I don't think you should have two women's titles. But that's just me. I think that would have been absolutely incredible with Cargill versus maybe Hayter down the line. What do you think about that? That'd be something. That'd be good.
And I get what the... like two titles, maybe they're trying to use one as like a television title type of thing, but I think they should actually look at taking that title away and putting tag team titles instead, because there's so many women's factions that they have there. And if you put them all together, you probably can have a better tag team title scene than a secondary singles title if they want to go that route with TBS.
Yeah, and it even brings back, you know, the first ever press conference they had saying, yeah, we're going to prioritize tag team wrestling. And yeah, you know, they've done it, but not to the extent of which I believe they would. I mean, they have the trios titles now. They do have the tag team titles for the men, but yeah, I agree. I think they need to integrate the women's tag team championships at some point. We've seen it in WWE. It's becoming a little more, it's getting a lot more traction now, as you know, when they first came up. it died, what, like after the Iconics won it, it died. So, but it's coming back slowly. But I do agree. I think they need to integrate an AEW tag team women's title at some point down the line. But of course, now we got to move on, dude. To me, this was, I thought this was absolutely unbelievable. The six-man tag team match. You had Wardlow and FTR taking on Jay Lethal and the Motor City Machine Guns. Motor City Machine Guns, man, you said it last week. They're a team that's up and coming. Jay Lethal, I thought, looked terrible in this match. They did him dirty here, but Wardlow looked like a monster. FTR doing their typical unbelievable technical tag team wrestling. You think the right team won here? And what do you think is next for Wardlow? Because, man, he put on a hell of a dominating performance here.
Yeah, Wardlow continues to look strong there. FTR, this is another example. They're putting more of a priority on the Ring of Honor tag team titles than it seems like their own tag titles. So
they are, yeah.
At some point, like, FTR is going to have to take the AEW tag titles because they're so over right now, and all their matches they've been in, they're so good. So I would like to see that down the line, FTR going after the AEW tag titles. Not that Young Bucks don't hold it, and they can probably do something different there. But Wardlow, I think, had to be a big standout just because, like, his title reign right now, it's only going to go through so many guys, kind of like Jade Cargill. So if he's not elevated after this, it's going to be a weird situation. So maybe Jake Hager faces him now that he re-signed and looks more committed to AEW. And I don't know what his fighting situation is. If he doesn't want to do that anymore, I think AEW would benefit from that.
Yeah, I was just saying, maybe if not Hager, maybe go with Miro. Miro versus Wardlow. I think that would be a freaking train wreck. That'd be unbelievable. Two big bodies going at it there. But then, of course, Salino, this was probably the most disappointing match of the whole wrestling weekend. Your boy Ricky Starks just getting squashed by Powerhouse Hobbs. Take us through that match, Salino. How disappointed were you? And because to me, I was stunned.
Yeah, it was kind of quick too. So hopefully Starks isn't, like, they're protecting another injury that they have, because looks like all the guys on their roster seem to be getting injured by the week. But yeah, Ricky Starks, his presentation, everything's great. Crowd loves him. He's over. And then Powerhouse Hobbs beats him like the way he did. I think it helps Powerhouse Hobbs because he beats a guy like that. But maybe he's another one that can go after Wardlow. Powerhouse Hobbs versus him one-on-one. Especially now that he's a lot more over than when he came in. Like, he's not as viewed more as like a rookie type of guy. Like, he's more established and he's more comfortable, I think, as a heel now. Ever since he turned on Cody, it looked like Taz being in his corner really helped him. So he's another guy I would put in that title scene.
Yeah, I was gonna say, if there's anything that you can benefit from this match, it's, I mean, Ricky Starks gets a little bit more sympathy, gets over as a face a little bit more. I know a lot of fans are going to be questioning why he got squashed in 5 minutes, but then you look at Powerhouse Hobbs, you said it best. He's a dominating big-time heel right now, and that's a huge win. And if he could, you know, elevate his heel run, go up against Wardlow, maybe be successful in winning the title and keep moving forward, because he does have potential, man. CM Punk's first feud was against him, and that's a big sign. Or I don't know if it was his first or second feud, but he went up against CM Punk. So he's got a lot of potential, and Taz basically grooming him to be this better heel has only benefited him. So I'm really happy that, again, both these guys, even though the match was a little disappointing, I think long-term narrative, I think they're both going to be just fine. But then, of course, we had, to me, match of the night, Swerve in Our Glory taking on the Acclaim for the AEW tag team titles. We saw before the match, it looked like Swerve was maybe going to turn heel here. They had a little more heel heat than the Acclaim. We all know that the Chicago crowd is pro heels all the time, but the Acclaim here, man, they got a lot of pops, especially on the near falls. I just, like, to me, Billy Gunn being there was just the cherry on top. Like, he scissors swerving our, like, to me, that made no sense after the match. But I love this dynamic, man, how Swerve and Our Glory are the faces. They're getting booed, like, tremendously. And I thought Max Caster here, man, just lifting up Keith Lee during the match was just one of the most impressive spots of the night.
Yeah, they're fun. especially when their music hits, like, you know, the crowd knows what's going to happen. And even JR on commentary gets in on it when Max Caster says, listen, and Jim Ross, gotta love him, plays along, just adds on to the whole like entrance. And I think Swerve now, like, even after during their press conferencing, he showed signs of being more and more of a heel, like he was going in that direction. And on Dynamite, he really went in that direction. So I'm interested to see how this is going to go. Him and Keith Lee, I think maybe a split's going to happen here, and that's how the Acclaim end up winning the titles. And this is probably the best for everyone involved. You can have the Acclaim, who's the most over team, and you can have Swerve and Keith Lee, who are better off as singles guys going at it.
Exactly, man. It only benefits everybody. And I know the fans were disappointed to see the Swerve and Our Glory win, but I think the long run, this is going to be a tremendous feud and a tremendous end result. I think it's just going to make for better television. So to me, it was easily match of the night. They gave it 23 minutes and, you know, they didn't disappoint, a lot of near falls. But then, of course, we already talked about it, but we had the four-way match for the interim AEW women's title. I'll just quickly ask you, Alino, how over is Shida? And man, like, there were so many times in this match I thought Britt Baker was winning it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought that's what they were going to do, especially like they need an interim champ. And I guess like Britt Baker's been champ before and it would just add on to being a heel. So I thought she was going to win that the longer the match went on. But they went with Toni Storm, who was that original idea. Her and Thunder Rosa were supposed to wrestle each other, and Thunder Rosa, for I guess getting injured, they went with this plan and they still give her the title. So I just think that they're going to go in that direction. If she wins an interim title, I think that means she's going to take the title off Thunder Rosa, and it's inevitable. So I'm not going to really, I don't know if it'll look forward to that. It just depends what they do with the whole lead up and build up to that match and how long it's going to even last at that point.
I even said to Collab during the match, I'm like, watch, it's Hayter and Britt Baker in the ring and Toni Storm's in the corner. She's going to pull her best John Cena impression here. She's going to beat the odds, and that's exactly what happens. So I'm happy for Toni Storm getting the title, but I just really wanted to see Hayter and Baker win it. I think that would have been a little bit better, a little more fun for me. But, you know, seeing Toni Storm do it, especially after how her run went in WWE, I think it's only well-deserving for her. But then to me, dude, this was the comedy segment of the whole night. You have freaking Jungle Boy's mom and sister ringside, and Luchasaurus pulls the triple turn. He turns one week, the next week, and then he's back. He beats the shit out of Jungle Boy on the way to the ring, and you just see Christian smiling. And it, to me, man, like blowing a kiss to Jungle Boy's mom. Like, this to me was the perfect opportunity. Like, again, you said it perfectly. Christian Cage is now injured for 9 months. Obviously, there was something wrong with him here. I just thought this was a perfect way to go about it. I know a lot of people wanted to see what Jungle Boy can do in a meaningful singles program with Christian, but I guess they have to wait. But what were your thoughts on this whole segment? It was only 20 seconds, but to me, it was perfect.
Yeah, I know people like didn't like the match. It was short, but I love it. Christian is such an asshole as a heel. Fucking love it. He comes out just teasing everybody. And then even Jungle Boy's family at ringside, this guy just doesn't care. And then Luchasaurus comes out. This is probably the best way to protect everybody, because now Jungle Boy gets more sympathy as a baby face because of what Luchasaurus did to him again, and what Christian has been doing to his family. And then brings up his dad, and then brings, like, I think it just helps Jungle Boy. And we even saw in his promo on Wednesday how he said, like, eventually when Christian comes back, he's going to go after him, and that he made Luchasaurus his career. So I think this is a perfect thing for everybody. Like, Jungle Boy is going to become a bigger baby face, and Luchasaurus gets to be a big heel. And Christian, when he comes back, he's got a big feud already. So I think even now Christian injured, I think he could come back and be in Luchasaurus's corner and still cut his promo. So everyone's going to benefit out of this one.
Yeah, it's going to be incredible, man. Just to see Christian maybe in like a sling, still ripping him apart, it's just going to be absolutely phenomenal. But then, of course, we had the two ex-WWE legends here. We had Jericho taking on Bryan Danielson. Garcia was involved quite a bit here. I mean, look at... I loved it. 20 seconds, pins him. Easy work for Christian. But then, of course, we had Jericho and Bryan Danielson in a pretty long singles match. Now, the pace obviously at times was there, but for the most part, it to me reminded me of a Triple H type match. Very slow paced. Alino, I know we both love these guys to death. Do you think the right guy won here? And how do you think they made both guys look overall in this match?
Yeah, I think they made them both look good. They gave them their time to, I guess, shine and look like they were going to win. I like how it wasn't like Daniel Bryan losing and it was going to be something dumb that happened that led to it where we're going to get a rematch 2 days later. So I think Jericho was the right guy to win because I think they're doing something with Garcia and the Jericho Appreciation Society and with Daniel Bryan or Bryan Danielson, like congratulating him and putting the title on him. It pissed Jericho off. So with that whole feud, I think Jericho's going to go after that Ring of Honor pure title, it looks like, and he's going to beat up his boy and tell him to fall in line there. So I think they're going to be connected and Jericho's going to build another star in AEW.
Yeah, I love it, man. I think the whole thing with Garcia too, and he really cares about him, man. He really is saying, you know, like, listen, like, I'll be there. I'll be kind of like a father figure to you. Like, I've been here for 30 plus years in this industry. Like, just listen to what I have to say. And this guy just continues to go with Daniel Bryan. I don't get it. Like, this guy, he's a hardhead, Garcia. But, you know, I love seeing Jericho, man. Like, he's been doing it forever. He's shredded. He's lost so much weight. Like, you could literally just see it in his picture alone. I love how they call him the lion tamer Chris Jericho now. It's just awesome. But, Alino, I'll ask you this. Like, if you had to guess who this feud benefits more in the long run, who would you say? Because I don't know, man. Like, as crazy as it sounds, Bryan is younger, but I think Jericho might benefit a little more here. I think they have a little more direction with him than Bryan Danielson at the moment.
Yeah, I agree. I think Jericho, like that whole Jericho Appreciation Society, like when it started, I thought they're just throwing another group of guys together and kind of like the inner circle. They threw Santana, Ortiz, Sammy Guevara, and Jake Hager with them and didn't really make sense at first, but he made it work. And I think they're doing something similar now, but these guys are all younger and for the most part, not really as proven as the other guys were. So I think he has made it work for the time being, but eventually I think they have to make a star out of like Garcia, and they're doing it now. And I think Danielson losing was probably just a way to help Jericho be even more of a dominating guy. So like that, when Garcia does beat him, it becomes a bigger deal.
Yeah, I like that too. And Alina, do you think Tony Khan really cares about age and like how you perform? Because I'm looking at Punk, he's the champion. Moxie's a little bit older. Sting is still going. Like, when does it get to a point where you think Tony Khan sits down with those type of guys and says, you got to start putting people over here? So, I mean, I'm curious with Bryan Danielson and Jericho whenever they get to that point, because right now, man, they're still dominating faces on AEW weekly.
Yeah, I think with Jericho, it helps that, like, he did put guys like Orange Cassidy help there, but like with Danielson, I think they want him to be lurking in that main event scene just in case, like you want to do like Danielson versus Omega again, or even Adam Cole when he comes back, they can do that. So I think he's going to still look strong, but I think against guys like Jericho, they might sacrifice a win here or there just to make sure Jericho is still in that scene where a young guy beats him and it's like the biggest deal, like bigger than winning a world title for them.
Yeah, I agree. And we have two more matches to go through quickly. What did you think about the House of Black versus Miro, Darby, and Sting? I know Miro looking like that. I thought he was going to be a baby face. And then, of course, he doesn't want to tag out. And you see the dysfunction between Miro and Darby. And what did you think of this match overall? Because, man, to me, I think it could have gone a lot better. As we do know, Malakai Black, he wanted his release from the company. And then you see him take the pinfall. Like, is this just getting bad to worse for Malakai Black and Tony Khan at this point?
Yeah, like I think that was unfortunate too. Like, all these reports come out that he wanted to get released and they declined it, and it looks like this match was just a way to, okay, this is your way of honoring, yeah, like we're gonna do this and then you can leave under like whatever condition they offered him and accepted. So it was unfortunate, and I think the match quality kind of went down because of that. And I think with Miro now kind of teasing that he's going to be a heel, is their way of making sure that if we're losing a guy like Malakai Black as a heel, we can fall back on Miro to be that heel and step in that role. So it's going to be interesting with House of Black, though. Like, who's going to really lead there? Is Buddy going to lead, or are they going to make Miro join the group and lead? I think they had an opportunity there with Sting, but they didn't do it.
Yeah, I agree, man. I said to you, I think Sting could be the guy to lead it, but we saw Sting just inadvertently beat all of them. So, I mean, we'll see. I think Miro or Sting could be a good option. There's still a lot of time for one of them to turn on Darby and, you know, just go walk up to Brody King and Buddy Matthews and say, yeah, like, I'm your leader now. So a lot of intriguing options there, but I just thought the match just fell flat. But then, of course, we had the main event, man, for the AEW World title. We saw Moxley just squash Punk a couple weeks before, and, you know, it's in Chicago here. CM Punk does end up getting the win. I thought the match was a lot better than I anticipated, but dude, it wasn't all pro Punk, the audience. I heard a lot of Moxley fans out there. Do you think it was the right decision to have CM Punk win this, or do you think they should have maybe gone with the swerve and have Moxley retain here?
I think they should have just gone with something different and maybe have the Joker come out and add himself to the match, because they did say that he can wrestle whenever. And if it was part of the contract, they could have worked it in there and have a surprise ending. But with that whole squash, I think it took away from it, because it was like, okay, CM Punk's going to get the win back. It's in Chicago, and he's going to just take his title back. And then that's what ended up happening. So it was kind of unfortunate that the ending was kind of, a lot of people can see through what was going to happen. But I think MJF stole the show, and he got the crowd, which I thought was a surprise. I heard a louder response for MJF when he was revealed as a Joker than CM Punk after winning the title. And I think that's kind of worrying if you were the top guy in your own hometown like that, winning a title, and MJF, the biggest heel, is getting more love there.
I just think, I don't know if it's concerning. I just think it was the way that it was done, man. He hasn't been on TV for a long time, and we know the crowd in Chicago, they're always pro heel. Like, they're always buzzing around the Twitter sphere and looking at, you know, any rumors. But they did a good job, man, with MJF. Obviously, there's always going to be that predictability or that speculation. But you see, like, just, I love the ending, how the lights went out and then you hear the voicemail and then he just comes out and it's like, okay, like, you see the scarf on the Jumbotron and that's it. The crowd absolutely went ballistic, and he comes out, and it looks like we're going to get this MJF CM Punk feud down the line, and then just bad stuff happens after the show. And I got to quickly talk about that. And it's unfortunate, man. This is a company where you look at a lot of professionals, and if they are professionals, I guess in this instance, they weren't. We saw CM Punk and Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks get into a big altercation after the show went off air. Now, again, Alino, you probably know more than me. I'm not really sure who started it, but, you know, Tony Khan, he said that he, you know, he's vacating both the AEW World title and the Trios titles. So what does this mean moving forward, man? Like, is this whole MJF big return at All Out for nothing? And is he the guy that just ends up winning the title in the long run? Or do you maybe have Moxley again, surprisingly, play superhero?
Yeah, I think what it means was All Out was pretty much pointless. They had a whole tournament for a new title that they ended up vacating. And then they had a rematch for an undisputed title match that ended up being vacated. So it's unfortunate. I kind of feel bad here, but Tony Khan, I think he has to look at how he managed the situation. Pull up this picture. Like, he's going off on the press conference, making the company's CEO and founder look bad. And he didn't really say anything. I think if he handled it better and just said, you know what, we'll talk about this shit afterwards, just answer questions only about the match or the pay-per-view and we'll move on. And we got to sit down and talk about that. But that didn't happen. And then we find out literally after the scrum, CM Punk and the Young Bucks get into a scrap back there. Kenny Omega gets bit and his hair pulled by that other guy, Ace Steel, who popped up on TV a couple weeks ago, and all hell breaks loose. So it's unfortunate, especially on your biggest show of the year.
Yeah, again, like, what is next after all of this? Is CM Punk leaving the company? Are they suspending the Elite? Like, I have no idea what is going on. What does this mean for guys like Adam Cole, who are rumored to come back? Like, there's just so much implications with these four guys specifically. You build a promotion with the Elite, and these are the guys that, dude, they were there the first press conference. These are the guys that you're looking at to lead the way. And I don't know if it's CM Punk and his ego that started it. I don't know if the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega just believe that it's their company, so they had to take matters into their own hands. But at the end of the day, I agree with you. Tony Khan had to, I think he should have dealt with this a little bit better. Maybe, like, I don't want to just bluntly say he doesn't have the balls to run it, but you got to be a little bit more blunt. You have to take more of that authoritative approach. Because if a guy like Vinnie Mac saw this, this would be war. So I don't know what to make of it, Alino. Again, like I said, you probably know more about it than me, but this is going to be something that we're going to have to continue to watch weekly with the AEW product.
Yeah, and like what worries me is not like it happened. Like he was comfortable doing that with the leader of the company, this boss. So like I don't know if that's like a shot at Tony Khan from CM Punk, like I can get away with this type of thing, but is CM Punk sitting beside Vince McMahon in this situation? Do you think he
Oh,
does that?
no.
Yeah. So I think that's I'd be worried. Like if you're Tony Khan, I think that's a way of saying, okay, you know what? Maybe I have to change the way I approach this and lead some of these guys so they fall in line at times. But I thought that was like a bigger takeaway from me, that how he was comfortable enough to do it. And if it wasn't like for a big storyline, and it was we found out it wasn't for a storyline or a big work, then just makes your company look bad.
Yeah, and another thing too, man, like I don't even think he would have done that if Triple H was even beside him. And he doesn't even like Triple H. It's just, I think it's that respect factor at the end of the day, Alino. Tony Khan is new to this. This is a guy that is wrestling his number one passion. I don't even think it is. So, like, this is a guy in CM Punk who you're looking at his passion for wrestling. It's kind of gone downhill since 2014, let's be honest. At one point, he said he never wanted to wrestle again, went into UFC for a cup of tea, didn't work out for him, comes to AEW. And in my opinion, it seems like Punk thinks that he's been getting handed everything, and it looks like he thinks he's running it there. So there's definitely some sort of hierarchy dysfunction there where Tony Khan has to sit down, get maybe a little bit heated, and say, listen, I run the company. It's my company. Yes, I haven't been in charge of wrestling promotions for 45 years like Vince McMahon, but I'm trying my best to, make something out of this product. And if you can't be there with me, then the door's right there. And again, like you said, like, Punk brings the money, but in terms of the respect, I don't know if he respects a lot of those guys backstage.
That also, it looks like he's bringing headaches there because as soon as he wins a title, they have to vacate it and do a tournament and wins it again. They have to vacate it, do a tournament. So, like, if he comes back and says, yeah, I'm going to lead the company and be world champ and sell merchandise, okay, you can do that. It's just not going to be his world champion. So, can be in all those big feuds and run out your contract. If he doesn't like it, he can just say WWE's right there. Can go back if you want and call his bluff. So, I think it's just going to come down to what they do when everybody is healthy and comes off whatever suspension they're on.
And dude, I can't believe I'm saying this. I'm not a big Moxley guy, but I feel bad for him. Like, the guy has actually put in his due diligence. Remember, he had that big tricep injury in WWE, comes back, absolutely motivated, goes to AEW, has a hell of a record, and all of a sudden you're in the main event scene with Punk, and it's just not working out. Like, this is a guy where, how many title defenses has he been successful at? I want to say like five. Like, he's held the title for a bit. Again, in terms of the respect, I think Moxley has it in the locker room. I don't think a lot of guys question his ability, question his character build, like, none of that. So for a guy like Moxley to be in the situation where every title defense is meaningless, I feel bad for the guy. Like, he's trying to build a resume here. When you're being compared to Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins, man, like, unfortunately, Moxley is not on that level, but he's trying. So at the end of the day, the stuff that's been going on, specifically for Moxley, I hope this feud with MJF really puts him back on that consistent main event type of situation. But I want to end this pod, Alino. We went to Monday Night Raw and we saw Braun Strowman come back and he took out the whole tag division. So is this a burial of the tag division, or do you think they're just trying to build up Braun Strowman again to that main event caliber situation?
Yeah, I liked it. I think it was a surprise because you wouldn't expect him to come out during a tag match. I think that was the whole shock factor of it, and the crowd loved it because you can tell it wasn't like they weren't expecting it at that point of the show where there's a tag match going on and then Braun's going to come out for that. I think they probably would have expected him for Bobby Lashley in the Miz's match, and out comes Braun Strowman during the tag match, goes through everyone, great pop, and it looks like he's going to be on SmackDown going forward because he said that Friday's he's going to take over that show. So looking forward to see what they have for Braun Strowman. Hopefully leads to Bray Wyatt coming back too.
I love that, man. Like I said, you either do the Wyatt family reunion or call me crazy, man. Do you think they can maybe go immediately Braun Strowman, Roman Reigns?
Yeah, I can see that. Might as well. Like, I know he won it off like when they had the Braun and Bray feud and Roman came back, like they can easily go back into that program because so much time has passed where you can build up Strowman as saying like he's even better now because he had time away from WWE. So I think they could do that, and it would be like something where it could help even guys like Solo Sikoa and the Usos if they go into that program.
And I'll ask one last question, Alino, because you said he's going to be on SmackDown now, like for the foreseeable future. With a guy like Karrion Kross, who's there, Austin Theory in the mix, do you see Braun Strowman being a babyface for the long term, or do you see him eventually maybe turning heel? Because regardless, man, this guy, I hope since his release, he's had more of like a charismatic change, because I think in order for him to succeed at that main event level, we've seen it with the likes of Roman Reigns, we've seen it with Drew McIntyre, you got to be a little bit better on the mic. Do you think Braun Strowman would benefit more as a badass face, or do you think he would be more of that badass heel where he still talks his shit?
I think if he had a manager, like it might help him more as a heel. But right now, I think a face, he can work against Karrion Kross, and that would be a good feud, or they can always go back to him versus Drew. Those guys work well together. So I think there's still feuds there. Like if he doesn't go for Roman right away, you can do something with Kross for a bit and build them back up. But I think Braun right now returning to SmackDown is probably the best brand for him.
Absolutely, man. I think WWE is intriguing right now. We really don't know what to make of a couple of these names that are returning. And, you know, whenever Bray Wyatt comes back, I think that's just only going to make WWE even more must-see at the moment. So with that being said, this is episode 193. We went over Clash at the Castle, hell of a pay-per-view, All Out with MJF returning, and then, of course, the fallout of AEW and Braun Strowman coming back. So that was discussed all on this episode. This is Giancarlo Alino, Chris Martelli, signing off.